welcome to the Speaker's Corner at Raw Wine, sponsored by the Montreal Tourism Board. Starting now is presenting Natural Wine 101, a conversation with Sam Ben Rubin and the founder of Raw Wine Fair and Master of Wine, Isabelle Legeron.
Thank you.
So thank you everybody for coming. I have the privilege of sitting with Isabelle, who is really what this is all about. I mean, Raw Wine is Isabelle's vision. She is the founder, and she is very passionate about this. And there is no person better to talk to you about what natural wine is, what the natural wine movement is, what it means, where it's going. And we're going to get into that discussion pretty heavily. I'm Sam Ben Rubin. I do a weekly show on Heritage Radio Network called The Grape Nation. It's every Wednesday. It's available as a podcast. And we try to bring in the best people in wine and let them talk about what they're doing and what's going on. And Isabelle was on the show a couple of weeks ago to help promote the event and create awareness. And Isabelle is the only person who's been a guest three times on the show. Because when I started doing the show, Isabelle had just started doing the Raw Wine Fair, and I said, I gotta get behind this, and I gotta track Isabelle down. And it was such a success. We did it the second year, and you know, this year is now bigger than ever, as you could see. We brought the Speaker's Corner back, and both days are sold out. Right after a sold-out day in Montreal. So welcome and thank you, and let's try to get right into this. Isabelle, I think the best thing to get this thing started is to have you define what a natural wine is. And I think the important thing is how you define it.
Sure. I mean, so first of all, can I get a sense as to, can you hear me okay? The sound is good at the back? Not so good? How about if I speak more like this? Is it better? Yeah? Okay, cool. So who works in the wine industry? Okay. And then I guess, you know, we have a small proportion actually of people working in wine industry, so that's great. What I'd love this to be, and you know, with Sam's help, is to get something which is also a little bit interactive, because you know, we're going to throw some things out there. I've got lots of questions for you, maybe more questions than answers, in a way. And then I'd love to take questions from the floor and try and have a bit of a debate, right? So to start off, look, you know, what is a natural wine? What is a low intervention organic biodynamic wine? I guess you're all into this. I'm sort of, you know, preaching to the converted here. And I wanted this talk to be about where we're at now, where we're coming from, but also actually what, you know, what's next for our industry. Everything is about the farming. You know, we talk about the farming a lot, and I think this is more important than ever. So for me, whether you talk about natural wine or low intervention organic biodynamic wine, you know, everything starts in the vineyard. 90% of the work, in my opinion, is in the vineyard, and I think if you spend any time out there with the growers, you know, the main conversation will be about how important the farming is. And for me, that's important for a number of reasons, and we can talk about maybe the cellar later. But, you know, for me, organic farming, and I don't think I need to explain what organic farming, but whether we talk about organic farming or biodynamic farming or permaculture farming is about...
Well, I think, just quickly, I mean, permaculture, you should explain what it is. There's a difference between biodynamic and organic. I mean, if you quickly just, you know, cover those three things... I think it would help everyone.
Yeah, sure. I mean, to be honest, for me, more and more, these terms relate to a certification process. And when you talk to, you know, so organic farming, I think you're familiar, you know, it's really about reacting to a problem coming your way and using, you know, organically approved products. So moving away from the more man-made synthetic sort of a contact or even you know, more permissive sort of products. For me, in a way, organic farming is like the very bare minimum that you can do. Biodynamic is a more, for me, is a more holistic approach when you look, you use, you know, whether it's the lunar cycle, or whether you use more preparation based or try and improve soil life. But again, it's a certification process, and I find that a lot of growers, if you go and speak to the growers out there, the best growers and the best wines are actually people who go way beyond what is organic or what is biodynamic. You know, it's people who are very observant, people who try and move away from using any copper at all. So I think in a way, it's become almost reductive now to talk about just, you know, organic, right, or biodynamic. Permaculture is also a very holistic way of farming, where you try and use in as little sort of outside interferences as possible. You can go to speak to Jason Ligas, who for me, from Domaine Ligas in Greece, who's a brilliant example of a very good permaculturist farmer, who will, for example, use plants from the neighboring mountains to use as preparations for the vineyards, but who will be very careful in only collecting certain, you know, a little bit of flowers, a little bit of leaves, but not sort of being overly abusive of the system. So right, that you know, but you know, for me, quality is really coming from the organic farming system. You know, if you want to have the microbiology life, if you want to have all the elements coming from your vineyard, you have to preserve that life to start with. If you want to talk about terroir, you have to have the life in your vineyard. If you have a vine growing on a soil which is completely dead, there will be no microbiological life. There will not be any ability for the vines to actually break down and have access to the nutrients. So you might as well be growing, you know, a vine, you know, in the middle of nowhere, right, on a water system, and you wouldn't get any nutrients, and therefore there's no contact, there's no terroir. You can't talk about terroir unless you talk, you know, about organic farming. If there's no communication between the vine and a live soil, and that communication is only possible when you have organic farming, then you cannot talk about terroir, then you cannot talk about natural wine. You know, for me, this is 90% of the work.
Well, I had asked you that earlier. It almost sounded gullible. I said, what percentage of natural wine is really in the farm and what is really in the cellar? And you mentioned it twice. I mean, Isabel said that 90% of natural wine is the farming. It really starts.
And also we have a responsibility as an industry, whether you grow the grapes or you make the wine, we have a responsibility to not poison the planet and to not poison the people who buy the wine. You know, literally speaking, there is a perception sometimes that fermentation is a purification process. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard that, but it's the same in the spirit industry. We believe that distillation purifies, but distillation concentrates. Fermentation is exactly the same. You don't ferment grape juice and have all the bad stuff being precipitated out of the wine.
So your point is natural wine ferments better. The fermentation is better because the natural product, you haven't killed off all the...
Right, well, that's another aspect. So obviously, if you farm organically, you don't have all the pesticide residues.
Right.
And I think people's
minds...
Does that
interfere with fermentation?
If you farm your vineyard using tons of fungicides, for example, which will kill off the fungus, and yeast is a fungus, then by using products and spraying your vineyards, you're going to bring in grapes that are, you know, sort of dead anyway. By dead, I mean there's no, literally speaking, no life or no microbiology. You know, and in a way, this is kind of what happened after the Second World War, or even after the First World War, when people started using more and more products in the vineyards. They got to a stage in the 70s and the 80s where actually they were bringing the grapes in, but they couldn't ferment, and people couldn't understand why they were not fermenting. And then that's the realization that this fermentation process was not happening because of the excess product we were using in the vineyards. And then we started using yeast. We thought, oh, this is the answer, we'll start adding yeast. But then they realized actually the grapes didn't have enough nutrients, and then we're going to start adding vitamins and enzymes and provide the nutrients for the fermentation process. And I guess this is this whole, you know, it's like putting your little finger in the grinder. You know, you can't get it out. Once you start this process, it's very hard, which is why in order to make natural wine or low intervention, biodynamic and organic wine, you have to go back to the farming. You have to go back to ground zero and convert your vines, convert your farming, and then you can move towards organic and a natural fermentation. It doesn't happen just like that.
So why doesn't everyone do it? You know, why? I mean, we talked about how people are obsessed with eating organic foods and natural foods or more organic. Why doesn't everyone farm that way? Is it expense? Is it lazy? It seems like the right practice.
Yeah, that's a really great question. Yeah, of course, that's a really great question. And I think more and more, you know, with the work that we're doing here, and, you know, when I started raw wine in 2012, I wanted to organize a local fair in London, make sure that these growers had the right audience, that people would come, discover the wine's taste, and buy the wines. You know, I didn't really think we would be here a few years later here in Brooklyn or Los Angeles. And I think, you know, the movement has really gained momentum. I mean, look at this, you know, we're sold out. You know, it's an amazing accomplishment. It means that people want these wines more and more. But I think with this comes a responsibility. And yes, I find it really frustrating that only 7% of the vineyards worldwide are farmed organically.
7%.
7%, and so I think now, you know, our responsibility as an industry or as somebody who drinks those wines is to really go beyond what's going on right now. You know, we need, you know, we have this. I always, you know, this is a beautiful day. We're in this bubble, really, of people who are like, you know, everybody's happy. The wines are.
Are you calling Brooklyn a bubble?
It's a bubble particularly from the marathon.
You could be right, though.
But I guess what's important is to think about, you know, the bigger picture now. You know, we are at a time where we can cause change. And at the same time, because more and more people are drinking these wines, we also have to be more and more responsible. You know, there's no official definition as to what a natural wine is, right? There's no... you know, now, if you have a cloudy wine, then that's almost enough to be sold in a restaurant. And I think we need to now, and going back to the farming, I think we need to be more and more responsible, and more responsible than ever. We need to start asking even more questions, because we can have a big impact. And I think your point about, you know, being frustrated, like with the restaurant scene, is that you have still... tons of restaurants out there who will say, "Oh, the beef I use comes from this farm. It's grass-fed, you know, brilliant origins," and they will still use the winiest equivalent of a battery farm chicken. So we're still really very far away. So what I'm saying is that actually we have a long way to go.
There are, you know, restaurants that source everything that don't have natural wines. And it doesn't make sense.
It's a hypocritical for me. And I guess as an industry, I think we need to start, and as people who go out, I think we need to start asking a lot more questions and demand more answers and play more of an active part, even more of an active part than we've been doing.
So just bring part of this full circle, because when you're making a natural wine, you know, you've stated that the importance and the high percentage is the farming and agricultural part. The other part is the winemaking part, which, you know, in your mind is a smaller percentage. What are the practices of natural winemaking? It's low intervention, nothing in, nothing out. Explain, once you get in the cellar after you've had the right practices, how are you making, you know, that wine?
Sure, I mean, look, natural wine, what is your perception of natural wine? I don't know, in people's vocabulary, you know, I see the word natural wine being used more and more. That's why at the fair I'm really conscious that whenever we talk about the fair, we are a natural low intervention organic and biodynamic wine fair. For me, a natural wine is literally nothing added and nothing taken away. So it's 100%, you know, grape juice.
In the cellar and
so
out
in the cellar,
field.
The grapes come in, the natural fermentation process, which is, you know, obviously really incredibly hard,
right.
Which is why the farming is so important. And you can, I think that's the great question to ask growers. And I can see we've got a few growers here. You know, Antonella Manulli over here makes completely natural wine, Lorenzo Corino. I think the hardest part is to make wine completely naturally, which is why the everything starts in the farming. Here we let people add a little bit of sulfites, up to 70 parts per million, which, to be honest, is actually quite generous.
Now, sulfites is an additive that you add to the finished product?
No, you can add sulfites throughout the winemaking process on the berries. In fact, you can add sulfur, you know, in the vineyard for disease prevention.
Right.
Then you can add sulfites, you know, on the grapes, in the juice, throughout the fermentation process, all the way to the bottling stage.
But at a much limited.
So here we only allow sort of 70 parts. I would say most of the growers out there add, you know, a lot less than this. And I think, you know, that also brings, I think, an important point about where we're at. Some of you probably travel. I mean, some of you in the wine industry probably come and travel to some of the wine fairs outside, you know, in France and Italy. And at the moment, I think there's quite a lot of divides. People want to do their own little events because they only want to be with people who do not add anything and make completely sulfite-free wines. And I think it's important for me now. It's a time to sort of almost all come together because we can create change. And, you know, what is the exciting prospect out of doing an event like this and getting people to drink more and more wine is that we can convert more and more acres to organic farming. And that's, you know, when I decide, okay, we're going to do an event in another location, for example, really the motivating factor is obviously to try and support the growers and open more markets, but it's also how can we help with conversion of organic farming. This is what, for me, is the most important aspect of the work that we do here.
So how do we do that? I mean, the obvious thing is to support byproduct. I mean, what are the things that we can do?
I think we need to support.
I mean, the fair is great exposure for winemakers and consumers and the trade. What else?
Yeah, I think just like keep spreading the word and keep buying the wines, which I know sounds a bit of a silly thing to say because this is, you know, all of you are here because you're huge supporters. But outside of this reality in Brooklyn or in Los Angeles or in New York, you know, where people actually are getting really excited, you have a very different reality. You know, if you're a grower and you grow grapes, your neighbor might think you're completely crazy. Your local restaurant probably will not buy your wines because they don't want to have different wines. So you know, we're very fortunate in this very urban environment, but, you know, I think that the experience of growers is actually very different. So we just have to, I think we have to not relax. I think not think that actually we're finally getting somewhere, and we are finally getting somewhere, but I think it's really important that we push the boat and then we, you know, encourage people, that we help spread the words, that we, you know, because a lot of growers are not selling all their products or their wines, you know, they're not actually selling the wines for the amount of money that they need to be selling the wines to actually survive. You know, the banks are not loaning necessarily businesses if you're farming organically. I mean, it's a reality everywhere. But so, you know, there is actually quite a harsh reality. And also I've noticed, you know, if you go out there, you'll see that some growers are super popular. And other growers are actually not that popular. You know, you can have a grower with 3 or 4 or 5 deep, and you're trying to access that one because you've heard of it. And then you have somebody else who's actually all by their, you know, on their lonesomes.
But and that, you know, that sometimes boils down to press criticism. You know, a critic drinks a wine and writes about it.
I know.
You know, all those things. Marketing. Some people are
absolutely
more savvy on social media.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which everyone, you know, can get better at.
No, absolutely. But my point is actually don't be fooled by that. You know, in a way, it's just like be the person who is going to be discovering that new grower. Because it's easy, you know, because otherwise we're falling back into the same branding strategy that we've kind of like where we've been coming from with all these kind of blue chip names. And, you know, the beauty of our world is that we're super liberal and accepting, and we love different people and we love newcomers. You know, but as a new grower, sometimes it's quite hard to break into a market. So I guess it's part of, like, what can we do is also, it's not just about, I need to make sure I taste all these top 10s because everybody's talking about them, but actually, you know, there's a whole raft of people out there who may not be so well known, but who are equally deserving, equally hardworking, and who need to be,
I think that's represented, you know, inside. I mean, there's every level of, you know, winemaker notoriety, new people, represented, unrepresented. Give us a little context, because right now I think the movement is, and I don't even want to call it a movement, but natural wines, they're here. But why now, and where did it come from? You know, how did we get to here?
Yeah, sure.
Give me a little history on that.
I mean, look, we, you know, natural wine is, as people have been making natural wine forever. You know, we've been making wine for 8,000 years, and you know, we're experiencing a renaissance of actually something that has been made, you know, in a very similar way for literally thousands of years. We are a bit lagging behind, I think, you know, the wine industry, because we've experienced this renaissance and this acknowledgement of this hard work and this artisanal production in the food industry, where, you know, we've rediscovered the farmers market, we've rediscovered the proper farmhouse cheeses, and then I would say, you know, it started in the 80s a little bit, where some people, as a backlash from this green revolution, thought, hang on a second, you know, we're now going completely overboard with the products that we're using in the vineyard. We're using more and more products in the winery. So I think in the 80s there was, you know, people thinking things need to change, and that's where you started looking at actually the words natural wine, and then people going back to a lot more traditional ways of doing things. And then, you know, I saw it with the fair that we created in 2012. You know, I would say that the momentum has been getting
huge. Was that the first fair? In London?
Yeah. Where, you know, and I would say that over the past 2 or 3 or 4 years, you know, things have been getting a lot more impactful in that
sense. So if you ask where are things at today, I'll let you answer that, but you're up to 4, 5, 6 fairs. You just launched Montreal, so obviously there's a buy-in to natural wines because Montreal sold out. This event is sold out. So I know we're nowhere near where we need to be, but where are we?
Yeah.
You know, in the movement.
I think.
And what can we do? I mean, we.
But this is the point. You know, I think we are now. I mean, and I'd love to maybe get some questions and see from your perspective, you know, as somebody who drinks natural wine, as somebody who makes natural wine, as somebody who buys natural wine for a living, or natural and low intervention, because I think it's important to make the difference. You know, perhaps, you know, where do you see the next 5 years, or you know, how do we progress from being more of a niche into something that becomes maybe a lot more mainstream? How do we get into more of the restaurant trays? How do we have more of that impact, really? I mean, I don't have actually the answer. You know, for me, it's doing maybe more events. It's making sure that we communicate about the hard work. Like I can see Antonella right here. You know, I know that for them, it's you know, there's so much hard work involved and so much tiny quantities made. How do we communicate about the quality of the work that is going into making wine? When you have no ingredient labeling laws, you have no way of knowing. You just pick up a bottle of wine, and actually there's no way of knowing how this particular bottle of wine has been made.
Right, so the term natural wine is so vague in so many ways. You have to be careful. But wine is such a social lubricant, and it brings people together. I mean, isn't that the opportunity for people to really, you know, buy in and discuss?
Right.
You know, natural wines. I mean, what's the best thing to do? I mean, people should go into restaurants and support. They should ask. local wine stores. I mean, isn't it as grassroots as that to some extent?
Exactly, and you're right. We are in a new, unique industry because wine, in a way, crosses, social classes. It brings everybody together. You can have somebody from, wearing, tattoos to somebody having like a, wearing a suit and looking quite classic. And I've seen it with the fair, in London, initially, people who came to the fair were essentially people who were just really into natural wine or low intervention wine, and that's it. Whereas now we're getting actually a lot more of the establishment, a lot more established sort of, wine buyers. And I think wine is a uniquely placed agricultural product, because it has got this cachet, because people bring it to dinner tables. And we mustn't forget that wine is also an agricultural product.
But what's your take on the fact, and you mentioned it earlier, you go into a restaurant and they'll source their food, the farms, they'll say grass-fed, organic. People insist on buying organic products and all of that. But what's your explanation for why they give less of a crap about that for wine? If those are your practices, why wouldn't you carry it over to wine? Yeah. Why are we not there yet?
This is a big frustration for me because I've worked with many, many chefs, and I've done a lot of food and wine pairings. I've done television programs with chefs. And initially, I remember I was working with a chef who spent more time figuring out the chinaware they were going to use for that particular dish than actually really caring that much about wine. And I think traditionally, there is such a big divide between the kitchen. I don't know about your experience, but for me, I think there is a big divide with the kitchen, where chefs get all consumed about the creativity, the way the dish looks, and obviously sourcing the best ingredients. And then they relegate the entire floor work and sommelier work to a very different team, and there's very, very little connection. And in fact, I'm not talking about like places out there and a lot of very exciting restaurants who are, doing both, but I think the vast majority of restaurants nowadays are completely disconnected from their wine list. It's almost like it's a foreign product, and I think it's because people haven't crossed the bridge yet. They don't realize or they don't think of wine as food. And I think that, in a way, that's our big access, is just being able to relate the wine as food, as a way of engaging, as a product that you ingest that has authentic taste. And I think if we could access, that industry, I think actually that, we could change a lot. We could change the way agriculture and the way farming is. This is our potential as an industry.
So, I just ask over and over, how do you do that? I mean, I don't understand why more people. I mean, is it insistence? At your wine store, is it insistence at a restaurant? Is this movement enough to power that? Is there a responsibility on the winemakers? Is it the business part of it? Distributors? I mean, are we not getting the messaging out? I mean, what do you?
Yeah, I think we should get some questions. That would be great, and some comments maybe. Do you want to run through the? Somebody
if
can.
You want to come down here?
No, maybe if you grab the microphone.
Will that go well?
Hi, thank you. I mean, just a few number of ways. So as a consumer, I have to walk or go in Manhattan to specific places, go in and ask them. There are some wine stores that will cater to it, and a few of them will have like nearly half the place that does this. Having that conversation, when I go over a friend's house, families, whatever, you bring those wines, you talk about them, you do it that way. As a previous restaurant owner, have to educate people. So you need almost two lists, some that are a bit more particular state friendly and some that are not, that are a bit more natural. And then you start talking about the benefits and the pros and cons of what it is. But the biggest thing in restaurants especially is distributors. So there is certain companies that just run, and they send their people over and say, we got this, we got that, we got this kind of wine. And then you have to go, oh my God, they sound great. You get great prices or whatever. You don't get anyone coming in with a line of natural wines or anything along that sort. So didn't know that. But then there are wines within that portfolio, but they don't say natural. They just say Italian. They just say French. They just say these things. So a lot of it is...
So they're not... There's not enough attention towards it, towards
from
the one, or specification?
From a distributor standpoint, you know, I mean, think
so you're
about
pinning it.
It
on the distributor a
I'm
little.
I
don't mean in a bad way,
yeah,
but
no,
they can do a better
it's
job.
It's my experience when a distributor can sell a bottle to me for $5-6 because they have like 5,000 or 10,000 bottles. You know, having a restaurant in New York City, you know, that's
what are your thoughts?
That's a big... savings.
I think also there's a, I agree with you, I think there's also a lack of knowledge, which surprises me. You know, as a buyer, I get a lot of reps coming and we do a lot of tastings. And if I ask very simple question, even just like, how is this wine fermented? People actually don't necessarily have the answer. I think you have specialized portfolio, you know, owners and distributors who will know because and all their wines will be very focused and very low intervention and natural. But I am amazed at the, in a way, the lack of product knowledge because people are more focused on this is a Sauvignon Blanc and it costs $8 and it's great at your price point that you're looking for. And that's because that's another challenge. You know, when you, I mean, I work in restaurants and I run wine list programs and I do staff training. As a sommelier, if you decide to go down the route of natural and low intervention, it's a lot of work. You know, you have to be across vintages because not all the vintages are the same. You have to be training people and you train them on one wine and actually within 2 weeks that wine is out of stock because there were only 10 cases available. But like food, but somehow people relate to wine as just like this product in a can on a shelf that like doesn't change and is always
Coca-Cola.
The same.
Coca-Cola.
Yes.
It's business.
Right, off the beverage.
If I have a wonderful, wonderful wine here that I have one that made me a lot of money.
Yep. Sure. Yeah, and I think it's laziness. I mean, in a way, I don't know about you, but how often have you been into a restaurant, you've got a sommelier coming to see you, and you look into their eyes, and you know that they could be selling car tires, or they could be selling anything. You know, they're just there because, you know, great lunches, free trips. You know, really, from a brutal perspective, when you work in the wine industry, you know, there's a whole lifestyle that gets attached to it. Mm-hmm. But how many people do you really connect to and go into a mm-hmm. restaurant and look into their eyes and you know that these guys are, or women, men, women, collectively, are super excited? Mm-hmm. That's the other challenge, mm-hmm. is that you have, you know, it's
getting
like in any industry.
About something else, that's true. Yeah. And even, you know, like how we get our food, sometimes you can get it from a truck, you can get it from Jetro, you can get it from all these places, it makes it much easier. As opposed to getting it from a farmer, or you know, person like that's the same thing.
Yeah.
As
it's beverages. Ease, and you're right. You're right. Yeah. It is. It is a lot easier, and I think that's why a lot of people write wine programs that just tick boxes, and it's all about okay, I need this great variety at this price point because mm-hmm. I can sell it for mm-hmm. you know $20 or $30 on a wine list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
No, I agree with you. So that's one of the big challenges: how we get the industry to be a lot more sensitive.
From a producer's point of view, I agree with the lady. I think we have a problem with distribution because, like Isabel was saying, you know, we go to the fairs and we have seen this movement grow a lot, and also the interest from consumers. It's been exponential growth, and then there's a gap. Okay, so we go back from the fairs, we get mails, you know, if we're on social media, we get a lot of contact and everything. And then there's the gap because, first of all, I don't think there's enough distributors carrying natural wine. This is a problem, okay? For instance, I'm Italian, and at the national level, what I can do, what I think I will do, I will have to reach private customers by jumping and disintermediating, you know, like every other sector did. Of course, when you go abroad, then you need to have a distributor, so.
So are you saying it's hard to get distribution? And then if you have it,
yes.
The attention or the effort isn't always as good as you want it to be, both?
We have a couple of typical situations, okay? Either you have a distributor that is only carries natural wines.
Right.
Okay? They're harder to find. Now, they may be becoming more common, but typically they are small and maybe they cannot invest so much. Or what they do like every other distributor and they have the big names, they take you in the portfolio. They sell the big names because they're easy to sell. Maybe they sell producers that cost less, and you're just kind of sitting there in their portfolio and not getting distributed, okay? But you know, if he believed in you, he could sell your wine quite easily,
right?
Because we know from the market we have, you know, a feedback. And the other situation is where you have distributors that just don't carry natural wines, or maybe what I've seen, maybe a small change is, you know, the conventional distributor now are adding a little bit of a line of natural wines. I think this is a very healthy change because we need to have distributors that have the financial
We hope they're doing it because they want to, not because they have to, hopefully.
Do I have a question? So I'm curious, there are obviously a lot of standards that go into what wines can make it into the raw wine fair, and I'm wondering if there's been any interest on the part of raw wine to make that into some sort of label or certification that can go onto wine bottles so that it kind of helps bridge the gap between all these parts of the chain?
Yep.
Wait, can you answer our question, but explain that you have a standard for people that, you know, are part of Raw Wine and attend here, and what is that, and then, you know, address her question.
So first of all, we have hundreds of queries every year. I turn down dozens and dozens and dozens of wineries every year who want to come to the fair. We have certification, our own sort of like certification process. So people have to be organic or biodynamic or another form of clean agriculture. I would say 90% of the growers out there are certified. Some growers are not certified, but then, you know, I will ask neighbors, we will make inquiries, but we don't test for anything at the moment. Then we ask that people ferment spontaneously, so natural fermentation. And then there's no sterile filtration and ideally no fining, but if people decide to fine, then, you know, for me it's it's not ideal, but I understand that some people want to fine and therefore that's, you know, that's also okay. But I would say that most people out there do not do any fining. And then the only additive that they can use is sulfites.
So that's the requirement. Kat is asking, are you gonna make that a standard?
Yeah, of course, because, you know, more and more, you know, there's more, I am in a position with the fair, and then I have another hat as a wine professional, where we're getting increasingly, you know, I guess popular, and we're getting more and more people wanting to access the fair. And we are seeing, I guess, people who are seeing this as a marketing opportunity, and who are deciding suddenly they are going to be farming organically, which I think is great, and maybe making wine sort of naturally, but they say they make natural wine, but we're not quite sure, or we're not quite sure that they farm organically. So I am at the moment putting in place certain elements. You know, it's going to take probably about a year, looking at carbon footprint impact of the winery, looking at testing samples for actual pesticide residues. So these are conversations that I'm having at the moment and looking at how we can implement those and what will be the cost, because we're trying to make this, you know, as cost effective as possible for the growers. Is it going to be ever a raw wine certification? I don't know. I think it's probably going to be something much more internal, so that I know that whoever is out there actually, you know, if they say they do something, then I can prove that more effectively. Doing a certification process, you know, it's quite a lengthy process. We do get analysis from every single wine in terms of like sulfite levels, for example. So we do, you know, whenever we put an event on like this, it takes months of preparation and hassling the growers of like, we need, you know, certain paperwork and so on. I do what I can to sort of make sure that it's all above board. But, you know, we're dealing with human beings, and sometimes people, you know, even if you're certified organic, you could still do something that actually
that are farmers means. In the field.
Yeah, so I mean, I'd like to think
they're very busy.
Yeah, I'd like to think most people, you know, would, you know, are legit. But, you know, one thing that I wanted to, I guess, I think it's important, I think that your question brings me to this point, is that, okay, yes, you know, some people might want to, like Antonella, you know, for her, she's adamant that she doesn't want to use anything and to make completely natural wine. Some people are not comfortable with that. You know, some people are comfortable with bottling or adding during the fermentation process. And I think that's really okay too, you know. I think it's very easy to sort of criticize or judge because somebody maybe has 50 parts or maybe a little bit of sulfites. I think what we need to think about as a group of people, as a community, is that we need to think about, you know, the bigger picture, which is, I know I mentioned earlier, is the environment. You know, if somebody decides they're going to go and make low intervention organic wine because actually it's a great marketing term, you know, maybe that's okay too. You know, maybe if they farm 100 hectares or 50 hectares that will start the conversion process. I think that's a battle that we're winning. You know, I recently was in the south of Spain in the Sherry. I mean, Sherry is like a region notoriously famous for not having anybody farming really organically. It's a huge area in the south of Spain. And I was invited by a big group to do a talk to the entire sales team because they're thinking of converting and they have about, you know, 1,500 hectares. So if somebody like this actually thinks that, you know, maybe because the consumer wants it, that they are going to start farming organically, I mean, that is amazing. You know, and I think that's also what we need to think about, is like it's not just splitting hairs and saying you add 10 parts, you don't add, or you add maybe 50 or 70 parts. As long as we're transparent, and that was always what I wanted to do with the fair, is just putting it out there, you know when you taste, that this wine has 50 or 30 or whatever, so you know that you can make your decision. The rest, frankly, the winemaking is important, but the farming is way more important. And it's only by also bringing people together and having people who maybe are not comfortable with making completely sulfite-free wines, because it's really hard and you take risk and you can go and talk to all the growers out there. You know, you could lose your entire vintage or you could actually or alienate your entire customer base by moving to being completely sulfite-free. If you're not comfortable with doing that, then that's okay too, you know. It's just like, I think we have to sort of be strict, only allow people who are doing what they say that they're doing, farming organically, adding only a little bit of sulfites, but also letting people that are just beginning on the journey, because we have to remember that, you know, why are we here? You know, you're not here just because you're coming to spend a day in Brooklyn. You're here because you believe in something much bigger. I'm here because I'm believing in something much, much bigger. You know, I wanted to share a story from my family. You know, I and you, maybe you've heard this before, and I'm sorry if it's a repetition. But I was brought up in a family of farmers. I'm seventh generation. I was brought up literally with my family the whole time, doing the vintage, going in the vines. You know, I actually hated it as a kid because I wanted to be doing other stuff. And I was brought up in a family where, you know, we'd go and pick, you know, morels, wild mushrooms, you know, in March, pick snails. I'd bring the ducks in the vines to pick the snails. And, you know, they were wild salad. We would forage in our vineyard. And that was in the 70s and in the 80s. And in the 80s, you know, my parents were working so hard, and I, you know, I don't hold it against them because I saw their lifestyle. But somebody turns up at the door and says, you should use like a Roundup equivalent, because my dad never had a holiday ever since. I mean, my dad died, he was 60 from spraying the vineyards, and I never saw him have a holiday really when I was growing up because he didn't have any time. So somebody turns up and says, use Roundup equivalent, you'll have some days off. And then they're like, use a machine, because then, you know, my mom was doing the vintage and she was feeding 30 people for 3 weeks, having kids and all of this. And then somebody says, have a machine. You don't have to feed anybody anymore. You know, and then I saw my whole family vineyard being converted from a beautiful organic vineyard to a completely mechanized, non-organic vineyard. You know, I'm in a region where, and it's still to this day farmed conventionally by my brother, which is a big family dispute, but, you know, he's taken over, so I can't. None of my family get what I'm doing. They think I'm this kind of, like, extraterrestrial person, you know, who just brings nice wine, but then that's it. We can never talk about anything. So I saw the whole conversion, you know, the other way around. And my dad died of lung cancer from spraying the vines. My uncle died of Parkinson's disease from spraying the vines. You know, I come from a whole region of France completely decimated by this chemical activity in the vineyards. And that's why I do what I do. And I guess this is a very long way really. You know, I actually don't give a fuck if you want to use 10 parts per million, as long as you declare it. What's important to me is that you're going into that vineyard, that I can eat the leaf of your vines, and I know I'm not going to get sick from it. That's what we need to do. That's what we're doing, you know. And that's why it's amazing that this is changing. We're getting somewhere after years of, like, you know, changing stuff. But let's not get complacent, because we have a long way to go. You know, we're still talking about 7% of the worldwide vineyards farmed organically. So, you know, I didn't mean to put a damper on everything, but I just think it's, for me, this is why when it gets tough, we don't know what's going on. Like, what gets me in the morning is knowing that what we're doing actually has an impact, you know, and that's amazing that we can have an impact. Just by opening a bottle of wine, we can have an impact on the environment. I mean, it's incredible.
Want to take another question?
Yeah, sure. I don't know what time it is.
Yeah, we have time. We have time.
Come forth here, this gentleman.
Hello. I'm Alexis Schwartz. I work with Zevro Vine Selections, and we're a natural wine distributor. Really proud of what we do, so come talk to me later. I just wanted to, like, segue into maybe a more positive note.
Sure.
Just this idea that something that I've seen, I mean, I'm super young, but I've been working almost exclusively in natural wine for about 9 years at this point, and it's been really exciting to see the conversation building around scalable biodynamic agriculture. And we've recently picked up Mindcling in our portfolio, and then we've been working with, like, Agricola Chiarelli for a bit as well, and I'm really proud of what they do as a farm. And I think, like, a lot of interesting conversation that we can start to have. Like, obviously, I'm really proud of the little guys and the really focused artisanal winemakers in my book, but I've been very energized when we want to talk about where we go next to be highlighting producers like that as well, not just, like, the cult favorites or, like, in my opinion, like, the new masters, but also scalable winemakers. And that's its own realm of production and its own feat. And I was wondering, since, you know, you're in the field, you're in Europe regularly visiting, are there any other, you know, Spain is an interesting conversation. Are there any other names that you're really energized about that could be the next Mindcling or the next Chiarelli or, yeah?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I mean, there's actually quite a few people out there. And I think that is a great point is, you know, scalability. You know, I know some people probably disagree that, you know, this is a scalable feat. But I think you're getting people who are farming like 1,000, 2,000 hectares by having, you know, wheat and animals, husbandry, and you know, by having more and more people and employing more and more people. And I think you're right, you know, the market is buoyant, and actually maybe there is space also for something like this. And I think we are seeing people like exciting co-ops even in the south of France, places in Spain, places in Italy that are doing this, which is really exciting. Yeah, I think it's a really good point. Thank you.
We have a question over there.
Go on. I mean, the challenge will be to actually, you know, I would challenge the people in the store to be able to tell you exactly what kind of farming they're doing and what people are spraying or not spraying. I'm not sure there is this level of detail being. So I think, for me, I think certification is actually a great thing, but I think it should be not the goal. It just should be the very basic minimum just as a starting point, and then you build from that. And I think actually a lot of people do want to be certified as a guarantee, but it's just unless you speak to the grower and know exactly what they're doing, expecting people in a shop to know exactly what's happening is actually quite a challenge, I think. And also, you know, there is the danger that people are, because it sells and people want to sell, you know, that actually they might sell you something that kind of looks natural or screams natural, but might not even be, you know, or organic. And that's where you have to ask even more questions. Yeah, let's get the...
So I work, I can talk about
it. It's being recorded.
Okay, I work for a distributor that sells only natural and organic wine. And I've been doing this for a very short period of time, and I will tell you, when I walked in the very first accounts or prospective accounts to try to sell wine, and I talked about natural and organic only, I got glass eyes. They didn't know enough about it, and there's nothing worse for a som than not knowing about a wine somebody's talking to them about, because they're the expert or should be. So I found that natural and organic became a point of resale for me and not a point of initial sale. And by that I mean I wanted them to taste the wines and hear a little bit about the story of the vineyards. And then once they did that, then I could say, hey, guess what? These are natural and organic wines. And then all of a sudden natural and organic didn't become this scary thing to them. They said, oh, gee, we like the wines. Mm. But I like the point that somebody made about certification, because there's certified organic wines. Natural is not certified yet, and that would make life easy. Mm. And I think the way somebody else talked about grassroots to me, or everybody in this room, has incredible power because of social media. I don't care what channel you're on, but you have incredible power to take photos today, to send out messages today, and trust me, people read those, and those are very impactful. And it's a very cheap thing to do. And every winemaker here and every distributor has the opportunity to do PR. I can tell you, I've written to 15 magazines in my market, and because writers are always looking for stories. And I say, there's a movement towards natural and organic wines, and you can talk about Pet Nat, or you can talk about orange wines. There's so much to talk about. And they love it, and they will contact, if you give them a restaurant, a som, an owner of a distributor that's an expert, your name, they will talk to you, and all that PR goes a long way. So when I hear about environment, I care about that, but boy, if I want to go try to sell wine based on environmental conditions, I better just pack my bag and go home and stay there, because that's too big of an elephant to eat, even one bite at a time, you know, so.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe the last, what time is it?
We have time for two more questions.
Go on.
Hi, thank you so much for talking with all of us. My name is Catherine. I'm a sommelier at a restaurant in Detroit called Native House. And I have a lot of success kind of educating my servers with selling natural wine, but I'm always looking to try and do more and have it more structured so that they can understand it and actually be the boots on the ground to sell all of these magnificent things. We model our list on natural wines. We do have some more conventionally done things as well, simply because our market isn't quite where the coastal markets are. But I was wondering if you had any pointed tactics that might help with education for those people who have the boots on the ground at the restaurant floor. Thank you.
I mean, I think you've nailed it. You know, I when I write wine lists, our main priority is to survive as a business. So you have to write a commercially viable wine list. So I think, you know, going down the route of just doing very, you know, weird and wonderful and maybe sort of, you know, very, very too natural for a market which is not ready for it. But, you know, I think natural wine is not just about, you know, weird and wonderful or unusual. You know, there's a lot of actually people in this, you know, because we always say, oh, they're all vin de France or they have no appellation, but actually tons of natural wines are in the appellation system. And I think sometimes something I find actually very useful when I do my wine is to look at, you know, some famous appellation names and introduce the name Bordeaux, Rhône, you know, Châteauneuf-du-Pape, but use people like Domaine de Villeneuve or use people who are within the appellation, who have managed to retain and who are interested in retaining the appellation of their region because they're really proud of it, and have them as a way of you know, you could actually have almost an entirely natural wine list, and no one has to know it's an internationally, you know, it's an international wine list. It's a natural wine list, and I think that's the key: is to have something which has integrity, is at the very minimum organic. You could have an all organic wine list and maybe more commercially organic, and then introduce some, you know, more difficult wines to maybe sell because people, you know, be more of a shock. But I tend to use, you know, like champagnes, you know, I would never list anything like Veuve Clicquot and so on, or, you know, sorry, but, you know, like these brands. But I have like all the appellations, I have all the grape varieties, and then get people to go into these wines from wines that you actually, you know, you can tell because you have a lot of sort of very classic wines in these appellations that are made completely naturally without any sulfites even and with a great farming. You know, but in terms of staff training, I think you need to get the growers because they are the ones who get the story the best and gets really, really excited. Yeah. And also put wine in front of dishes, you know, get the chef to get dishes out and then suddenly put the wines with the dishes because I think that a lot of these wines, as you know, really come alive with food. So have them in context because I think very often you do programs and then you don't really do food and wine matching exercises for the team. How often does your team get to taste all the dishes from the kitchen, you know?
All right, we have time for one more question, if there is one out there, and then we're going to wrap things up.
Well, mine more than a question is just a comment. I am a distributor. I am in Tennessee. And our portfolio is 95% natural wines. Most of our clients, we cannot even go and get them tasting a wine if we say, oh, look, it's so cool, it's a natural wine. Because they are going to say, oh, it's a natural wine, it must be stinky, mousy, must have a lot of VA, you know, it must have problem and flows. So basically what we go is we take out our wine and we don't say that they are natural wines. So just have them tasting. It's life, it's good, you like it. Most of them don't even know that it's a natural wine. It's deceiving, yes. I'm sorry, but you know, for
it's
us...
It's more unfortunate.
You know, our goal is we sell this wine because we love it, we like it, we drink it. And our goal is to get the final audience, the public, to drink this wine when they go to the restaurants or when they go to the retailer shop. So people, yeah, may not know that it's a natural wine, but they just enjoy it. They like, they come back saying, this was a different wine. It takes a lot of damn work, believe me, because it's it does make sense commercially. We need to go against the stream. And, you know, but when they say, hey, you all, this is good. Okay, that's it. So, you know, even when you go in a shop, you don't see natural wine, organic session. It's really about try to have a final public to do a little bit of work, investigation. Everyone has an iPhone. You can go read the label. Because sometimes it's not the distributor's fault. We cannot do more than what we are doing. It's just getting people to know that, no, natural wine are not always stinky, mousy, too much VA, etc. They're just good. Just drink it.
Thank you for that. Thank you, everyone, for attending. Thank you to Isabelle Legeron for this talk and for all of this. If you want more information, Isabelle wrote a book a few years ago, Natural Wine, An Introduction to Organic and Biodynamic Wines Made Naturally. And if you really want to deep dive into that, Isabelle's book's outside. At Heritage Radio, we're doing an event called Co-Ferment. It's an exploration of the intersection of cider, wine, and beer. It's tomorrow, Raw Wine Week, at 100 Bogart Street, right here in Brooklyn, at 6:30 p.m. So look out for that, too. And thank you again for coming.
Thank you.